Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Asian American and Asian Research Institute's Friday Night Lecture Series, online edition. My name is Anthony Wong, Program Coordinator for the Institute. I'd like to welcome all of you from the comforts of your own home. Tonight, we're honored to have with us Professor Sambhavi Lakshmanan-Narayan from Medgar's Evers College and also a member, board member of the Asian American and Asian Research Institute to speak on her recently published book, Asian Women in Corporate America, Emerging Research and Opportunities. Now let me introduce tonight's speaker. Sambhavi Lakshmanan-Narayanan is Professor of Business Administration at Medgar Evers College, CUNY. She received her PhD in Management from the University of Texas at Dallas and Master of Statistics from the Indian Statistical Institute. Dr. Lakshmanan-Narayanan has been in academia for more than 25 years and has an extensive experience teaching courses at both undergraduate and graduate levels. Her publications include books, papers, books, and cases in the fields of management and business. Over the last decade, Dr. Lakshmanan-Narayanan has been an informal consultant and coach, career coach to several Asian women professionals and executives. These interactions provided the direct impetus for the book for which she will be presenting on tonight. And so without further ado, please welcome Professor Lakshmanan-Narayanan.
Thank you, Anthony. And thank you all of you for attending my book talk this evening. I will talk about why I wrote this book and what it's about and what direction it points towards. And after my presentation, of course, there will be time for us to discuss for your questions and more importantly, your comments. We have all heard of a very high-powered woman of Asian ancestry in recent months, that is Kamala Harris, and her mother comes from my hometown, that is my claim to fame. In the world of business, we had heard of, in the past, about a couple of high-powered Asian women, like Indra Nui of PepsiCo and Andrea Jung of Avon. But that was about 15 or 20 years back. Since then, we have not heard of Asian women in such high positions in the corporate world. However, Asian women have been making steady progress across various industries. And even in the business world, they have been increasing their presence, if not as high profile as these other two. For instance, the presence of Asian and Pacific Islander women went from 13 to 17 seats on Fortune 100 boards between 2016 and 2018. This was among the largest percentage increase of any group other than Black women. So it seems that Asian women are having a presence in the corporate world, and some of them are reaching very high levels. So one question could be that what makes it possible for these women to reach the highest levels of these biggest corporations, the Fortune 100s? What makes it possible for them to achieve their potential and their ambition and their professional aspirations? But on the other hand, not everyone aspires to be a Fortune 100 board member or even to be a CEO. Many women pursue equally satisfying and personally enriching careers, even if they don't get such public acclaim. So then the question is, what can make it possible for them to have the best career experiences and achieve their ambitions? My goal in writing this book was to understand and address careers of Asian women in American corporations. All kinds of careers. So in this section, I'll talk a little bit about my own career-related experiences and the trip I had to take in preparing to write this book. I mean an intellectual trip, not visiting places. As Anthony mentioned, I grew up in India and received both my undergraduate and graduate degrees in the capital city, New Delhi. My undergraduate degree was in mathematical statistics from Lady Sriram College for Women at Delhi University, and graduate degree in statistics with focus on quality control and operations research in Indian Statistical Institute. Then I came to Texas for a PhD in management at the University of Texas at Dallas. Since then, I primarily worked in academia. This was both my choice of careers from a professional standpoint, but also from personal considerations, such as time flexibility. I have taught at various different universities, the University of Texas at Dallas UTD, also NYU, DeVry, which was a very different experience of working in a for-profit university, and for the last 19 years at CUNY, Medgar Evers College. In my own career journey, I had very little support from women, particularly Asian women. This may have been due to my own personal circumstances and characteristics, and also there were no senior Asian women at my workplaces. But if you look in general, women and Asian women could have a variety of resources that they could tap into. Being Asians, family and extended family are likely to be a strong source. This is also related to friends networks. Some of these could be family friends. In the United States, unlike India where I grew up, alumni networks are well organized in college and even high school. So that could be another source. These are resources that anybody could use. But there are other resources that are particularly directed to Asians and Asian women. There are community related groups, which may be local. There are social organizations like Sakhi for Women, which supports South Asian women facing domestic abuse. There are volunteer groups, couple that I'm familiar with that predominantly involve Indians are Asha and Pratham, both of which raise money for education in India. One popular way for Asha to do fundraising was via marathons, and I was familiar with this group about 15 years back. I was quite surprised at the number of younger and junior corporate folks that it attracted. So it seemed to fulfill some need for them beyond a charitable effort. Of course, there are also religious associations that are linked to churches, mosques, and temples. Aside from this, more recently, I found certain meetup groups that are specifically directed to Asians, even Asian professionals. Which brings me to professional groups. Many years back, there was an effort in New York City to have a South Asian Women's Leadership Forum. This group organized talks and even annual conferences. There was pretty good attendance since it seemed that Asian women were really looking for some such resource. But this soon petered out after 3 or 4 years. It seemed that it was mainly driven by one person, and perhaps when she couldn't run it any longer, it just faded out. So the question in my mind was, does the need even exist for a book like what I was envisioning? My interest was in women working at entry and fairly lower levels of corporations. Some points to note about Asian women. Asian women are relatively recent entrants into American corporate workspaces. The number of Asian women in the US increased significantly due to changes in laws in the 1960s. As has been documented by many people, women came in different categories as immigrants. Some or many of them were trailing spouses. Their husbands were either residents or immigrants and worked in the US. Often these women came on a visa in which they could not work, at least for some time. Some immigrants like myself came as students for college education, found jobs and stayed on. Some others came directly as employees, such as a number of nurses. Apart from immigrants, there were of course Asian American women who could trace back immigration of their ancestors many generations back. At the same time, in the last few decades, the landscape was changing within American society. A higher percentage of women was working. So it was not unusual sight to see women in the workplace, even if it was mainly at lower levels. This has been changing over the years. So the confluence of these meant that there is an increasing presence of Asian women in corporate workspaces. Even a cursory look at some literature shows quickly that Asian women have unique characteristics and needs. I will talk a little bit more about that later. So the question to me was, where are they going to get answers to their career-related questions? All businesses in the US have been seeing increasing diversity in their workforce, and they have responded, or rather been forced to respond. They have been doing this in a variety of ways. You can read about that in my book. For example, one way is to have affinity groups, which are now called as employee resource groups. For another, they have specified positions to address what might be called as diversity needs or diversity issues. Now these are called as chief diversity, equity, and inclusion officers. But the question is, are these effective for Asian women? Another place for guidance for Asian women could be senior Asian women in corporations. The initial big wave in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s can be thought of as the first or generation one in almost all workspaces. That is people like myself. Now it is the presence of Generation 2 or even Generation 3 in workspaces. What can younger and more junior Asian women of today learn from these past generations of Asian women in similar workplaces? Finally, another potentially powerful source are personal and community networks. They can capture a lot of experience and capital, both social and professional. So these are some ways that Asian women who are junior and younger could get some guidance in their career. I can tell you that women of my acquaintance, family, friends, even my daughter, have often asked for guidance with regard to their career. Some of these women are in demanding industries and they have consulted professional and executive coaches. Workplaces can be brutal, especially corporate ones, and these women need all the support they can get. So clearly a need exists. I mentioned that Asian women need to be seen as a group in their own right, not subsumed under other groups, because they have differentiating features. Not acknowledging this means that there is a missing piece in the picture presented of American workspaces. Likewise, the understanding and documentation of experiences of women, and there is a lot in the area of women in workspaces and in corporate organizations, is incomplete without identifying and describing experiences of Asian women. These were two of my motivations in writing the book. Further, I felt strongly that Asian women in entry and junior level positions needed a quick and easy guidebook about corporate organizations and what to expect there. My intention was not to highlight negatives and cautions, but more to provide an objective look so they could be informed. Finally, I do feel that communities can be very influential in providing support and guidance for the next generation. So my hope is that work like mine will provide some understanding of what the needs are for Asian women and how communities can respond. Just a little note of what happened in my journey towards writing my book. Very soon, I realized that there was not a whole lot of published work on Asian women in America, let alone in corporate workspaces. I did my literature survey primarily using CUNY databases, since they were free and available to me and are quite extensive, and because I wanted to use peer-reviewed research. I did refer to Google Scholar to get information that might have slipped by in the CUNY search. I used a variety of search terms, combinations using including Asian, women, business, corporate, America, USA, etc. If my search was incomplete and any of you have sources I've missed, please do let me know. I also identified books on related topics by doing a search within CUNY and also in Google. I started my effort in spring 2019 semester. At that time, there was fortuitously a conference on Asian women business leaders held in the Bank of America building near Bryant Park. That conference was quite an eye-opener for me. The participants were mostly mid-level and mid-high-level Asian women in American corporations like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Johnson & Johnson, even Barclays Center, and a couple of media organizations like Nielsen and the Working Women Group of Magazines. Nielsen presented an analysis that they had done of past winners of an award for Asian women entrepreneurs. The women at the conference talked about career strategies, and what they said was very informative and even surprising. So this was very motivational for me. And finally, I had an odd experience. There was an Asian woman in a high-powered corporate position in the United States at one of the iconic American companies, corporations, that I felt would have tremendous information to offer. I contacted her through my personal connections, but she sent a message back that the CEO had told her not to talk. From my personal experience, I know it is very hard to get corporate folks to talk, and they would not say anything beyond the party line. That is why it is difficult even to write business cases based on their experience, let alone something of their personal career approaches. So my choice of approaches to writing the book was a familiar one. Should I rely on published work, papers, and hopefully books related to Asian women in corporate America? If there was enough material, it would be helpful in building models. We can anticipate different models since Asian women are not a monolith. Or should I try to do surveys or interviews? Study and review the careers of established successful women. Try to identify commonality in their stories and propose strategy advice. That is secondary sources, primary sources, or popular book. There have been a few books that followed the second approach of interviewing certain high-achieving women and writing about them. But the question was, how much can you generalize on the experiences of a few very high-achieving women? So I decided on the first approach. My hope is that there will be researchers that will follow the second approach in terms of doing surveys that capture both the uniqueness of Asian women and that can be generalized to the group. I did find a couple of papers like that, which I will mention later. In preparing to write the book, I talked to as many people as I could to get an understanding of what would be issues of interest and importance to Asian women. Women from that leadership conference that I attended were responsive, especially the ones from media organizations. I also spoke with authors of papers that I found were very interesting and useful. Finally, I spoke with women in my own personal network who trusted me. These included women working in corporations, nonprofits, and even a venture capitalist. All of this gave me an idea of what would be important for Asian women entering or in lower levels of these corporate organizations to know and be aware of. This led me to a deep and wide search for publications. I referred to more than 500 papers on not just Asian women, because there were very few of those, but on related topics. I also refer to some books, and I will talk about a couple of them later. My intention in doing this extensive literature survey was that I wanted to present the most current information possible. Based on all these conversations and readings, I decided to focus on careers of Asian American women in corporate organizations in the United States. I started out thinking about women in business, but there is a difference. Since there was so little direct research, I had to frame this as within the context of larger corporate careers and women's careers. I also wanted to take a holistic look at careers so that women would get an understanding not only of workplaces, but themselves in these workplaces. When we talk about women in business, often we mix working in business organizations and owning your own business. It is true that both are businesses, but in terms of managing a career, they are very different. Organizations, especially in the United States, are attractive career options for a variety of reasons. Firstly, in general organizations, there is much more stability of the work environment than in owning your own business. Secondly, especially in the United States, the corporate organizations are subject to quite a few restrictions, both legal and social. In other words, there are rules to the workspace. So often it becomes a matter of knowing how to play the game within the rules in terms of managing your career. I should also add that people in general do want to work for organizations. That is true even today, even in the middle of the pandemic. Last year, a survey showed that even young people prefer to work in organizations. Flexibility in terms of career is prized, but is prized even more when it is within a corporate environment. So this is the book that I wrote, Asian Women in Corporate America, Emerging Research and Opportunities. Corporate America is where most Americans work. Most Americans work in for-profit organizations, and roughly 80% of Asian Americans work in the private sector. Women are an increasing presence in all workspaces and in corporate America, but they have different approaches and experiences. Their perceptions and motivations are informed by social norms and experiences. So Asian women are different than what I've been in the past as general employees working in corporate organizations. And this is about emerging research, since there is not a whole lot of research, And so I wanted to try and point out the gaps in research and the opportunities for doing more. My intent in writing the book was to provide a complete view of the organizational workplace experience for Asian women. So chapters 2, 3, and 4 are about organizations. That is, this is the organizational perspective. What an organization is, how it functions, and how it deals with employees. Each chapter starts from the general situation, then addresses women and Asian-related content to the extent that there was published work, and finally Asian women-related content again to the extent that there was published work. The second part of the book is from the individual, in this case, Asian women's perspective. Chapters 5, 6, and 7 are about what it means to be an individual working in a business organization. At the end of chapter 8, I identified some areas for research. There are so many, but the easiest is to build on what has been done for other groups, such as women in general or Asian Americans. Through the process of my writing, I realized that I was addressing 3 audiences. First is students. The idea for writing the book, in fact, began when I was teaching a course at my college called Women in Business and Management. And I realized that such courses needed to talk about women in less general and more nuanced ways. So students in courses related to women in business or women in management, whether in business or any related field, are one audience. Second, and directly related to the lack of published work, are researchers in the field. I try to point out some immediate gaps in research. Third, and since I did give drafts of the chapters to women I know, they're also practitioners, people working in these workspaces. Even women that had business education background, they're not completely prepared for these organizational workplaces. I try to highlight matters of importance in managing one's career in these places. So for this group of people already in the workplaces, the takeaways and understanding of organizational workplaces and of their own career pathways. I had to refer to content in a wide range of related fields, since I wanted to give as current an understanding as possible of the organizational environment. So I did refer to publications in management, of course, but also career studies, women's studies, sociology, and psychology. So in this part of my presentation, I want to clarify what exactly the book talks about, the core content, so to speak. And that is really organizational careers in corporate America. We are all familiar with organizational careers, but I just want to clarify this for some other comments I'll make later. The overwhelming feature of an organization is captured in its organizational chart. What you see here in blue is actually a partial organization chart of CUNY. The strongest characteristics of an organizational job is that it is linked to a position. The position states the responsibilities and rights of the person in that position doing the job. Within an organization, typically work is specified, so the person knows what they are to do and sometimes how to do it. And the specification could be to a larger or smaller extent, depending on the work and the organization. There is division of work, leading to scope for specialization. That is an important factor for Asian women, since this gives an opportunity to become competent experts in specific areas. But work in an organization has to be coordinated, which means that you have to interact with others. How that interaction happens and how much depends on the work and the organization. Also, every person in an organization has a boss, even the CEO. And finally, how well you fit into a position is evaluated. So organizational careers are linked to positions and move across positions. You may join at a certain position and hopefully move up, but sometimes the movement is sideways, which may be moving across departments, moving across divisions. and very, very rarely could also be downward. We should remember that organizations are primarily interested in finding the best fit between a person and the position, at least in theory. And that determines a lot of career movement. This is the design of organizations. So what should people understand? I'll say especially what should Asian women understand about organizations? We expect the ideal and hope for it, that the decision of who is in a particular position is based on competencies and skills, and that some kind of objective performance evaluation will happen for this, and that the organization makes decisions that are best for the business. But it is key and critical to remember that organizations do not make any decisions. People do. That is the reality. People make decisions at all levels. In making decisions, they weigh the consequences, but they are influenced not only by perception of others, but by their own self-perception. This is true at every level of the organization, from the lowest entry level to the top CEO. And it is very important to keep that in mind. So different careers may unfold differently, even within the same organization, and even when people have similar or same skills and competencies. Broadly, we can think of two different kinds of organizational careers. Usually, when we talk of managing one's career, or if you go to an executive coach, they will refer to planning for growth of the career. Certainly, everyone starts out, especially young people, or maybe just out of college, and they will be focused on career growth. By career growth, we typically mean upward movement through the organization. And careers do often move upward. So that is one kind of strategy where the person is focused on propelling their career up through the hierarchy, getting promotions and moving to higher and higher positions. And they will do some things in pursuit of this goal. In fact, most career advice books would be about this. So you can see some of the typical things that people following this would be: to look for opportunities to move across positions, move up, volunteer for challenging jobs, and pursue powerful relationships, and so on. But there are others who have a different view and expectation of their career. They may not care as much to propel it upward and may be looking for something else. So you can see that these people would be doing something different. They might emphasize competence, and they might build specialization, and they might maintain work relationships at professional levels just to be able to do the job well and not necessarily to move their career upward. For simplicity, and also because some published work has referred to these two different kinds of careers, I will call them as alpha and beta careers. At the start of this presentation, I was interested in careers of all kinds. Often the temptation when we look at particular groups, let's say Asian women, would be to look at high achieving women, the alpha careers. But many people have beta careers, and most careers might be a mix of the two. So it is important to look for other factors in career management, not just upward progression. The goal, as I mentioned at the beginning, is for Asian women who have an alpha career orientation to be able to achieve their particular potential that way, and for Asian women who have a beta career orientation to have an optimal career experience. No matter what expectations people have of their careers, we can think of career experiences as being affected by three forces. And this concept is at the heart of my book. Your career experiences are going to be affected by the organization and work environment you are in, both what that is, what the organization is and what the environment is, and by your understanding of it. Sometimes our understanding changes over time, even if the environment itself does not. Secondly, your career experiences are going to be affected by how you are perceived. This is a reality and something that you should be aware of. It may not be enough to know that this matters. You also need to know how it matters. That is, How are you perceived and what impact does it have? Thirdly, how you perceive yourself affects your actions and decisions and so impacts your career experiences. Again, two people may be similar in every way other than in how they perceive themselves, and they can have very different career experiences. I would fully expect some high-achieving Asian women to say, I had the same circumstances as you, but I just viewed myself differently and responded differently. And these three factors, of course, affect each other, and that's why there are arrows between them, and they affect the career experiences. So all of these are interconnected, and also all of these are dynamically changing. So the question for me was, how much knowledge do Asian women have of each of these areas? And that is pretty much how the book is laid out. In this next section, I'll talk a little bit about Asian women and workspaces, and a little bit about the research related to Asian women in workspaces and what it showed. Again, I had to refer to work on Asians in general and women in general, because that is far more than on Asian women. As I mentioned previously, the presence of Asian women in somewhat significant numbers in corporate workspaces is fairly recent. There is some work on published on the gender work participation of immigrants, which was referred to as Generation 1 in these workspaces. There is some published work on Generation 2 in general, at Generation 2 and other generations, and how they differ from immigrants. Some of these differences have deep impact on how careers play out. Generational differences are strong in terms of general outlook, cultural values, and networks that the women have and rely on. Immigrants, as expected, are influenced quite strongly by their country of origin and its culture. The generations are different from each other, and each has advantages and disadvantages in the workspace. But in general, it seems that Asian women have had a similar playbook for careers. There is a reliance on education and particularly on specialization. As I mentioned earlier, specialization is a feature of some corporate workspaces. That is a way to keep and to have and keep a job. Also, Asian women in America generally adhere to the American norm for work. Their participation in the workforce is more than in Asian countries. What they encounter in workspaces will have some overlap in terms of stereotypes, but how they choose to identify themselves can be quite different. So being an Asian American woman is not the overlap of being Asian man and being woman, and they are not an intersection of these two sets. Asian women do have characteristics of both being Asian and being women, but are sufficiently different. The question is that, is this double difference an asset or a liability in corporate workplaces? A distinguishing feature of Asian women is, of course, a degree of Asianness. Firstly, the question of what exactly is meant by Asian and whether there is such a thing as common Asian cultural values. And even if these values are sufficiently different from the American norm, how do they matter in the workplace? For that, we can look to the popular identification of cultural differences by Hofstede. People normally think of cultural differences as being of language, clothing, food, and some values, let's say of obedience. Hofstede, who has been cited innumerable times, identified certain dimensions of cultural differences. The main ones are power distance, uncertainty avoidance, and individualism versus collectivism. These play a big role in workplaces and in careers. For instance, power distance refers to the willingness to accept power and authority. Low power distance translates as the willingness to challenge authority, which is arguably present, is much less present in Asian cultures than in the American one. And this can become manifest in stereotypes of Asians in general and Asian women as well. So being an Asian woman has specific connotations. Now, some of the works that I refer to and that played a role in the content of the book. One was Pawan Bindra's book called Multicultural Lives. And this was published in 2007, but it is relevant even 13 years later. Pawan was a speaker recently at CUNY with his most recent book called Hypereducation. He was someone I spoke with early on, and I read this book cover to cover. The book was based on interviews with people in the Korean and Indian communities in Texas. It was very useful to understand issues such as identities, the sense of self and important values, stereotypes, and whether they were assets or liabilities in personal and in professional lives, the influence of communities, and the challenges that young professionals faced. A couple of papers that were very useful in illustrating career approaches of Asian women are here. It so happened that they were about Indian women. I wish there had been more references like this. Namita Manohar is a colleague at Brooklyn College that I got to know through her papers. She had spent a year doing an ethnographic study of Tamil moms in Atlanta, Georgia. Tamil moms are women from South India. These women had primarily come to the US as trading spouses. That is, their husbands, they got married and their husbands were working in the United States. They typically had excellent educational and even professional qualifications, but initially could not find work due to visa restrictions. But they did adhere to the norm of work outside home. So if they could not work for pay, they did volunteer work and picked up skills that way or pursued further education. The interesting thing was that they viewed, as did Asian women, many other Asian women, that working was mothering. It was taking care of their families. In that sense, Asian women differ from women in general, that they may not view work and home as being in conflict. They are aligned. I came across this paper by Monica Avia and spoke with her as well a few times. Her paper compared women working in IT, the field of IT, Indian and women in the US, primarily white. This study showed stark differences in outlooks. For instance, Indian women viewed IT work as feminine and being flexible and something they could do, while white women viewed it as masculine. Indian women perceived much less discrimination in the workplace than did white women. Against women. And also they pursued very technical specializations. Finally, in terms of mentors, white women preferred female mentors as having experiences that they could relate to, whereas Indian women preferred men. And this was found to be so not only in Monica Avia's study, but in other situations as well. So these two papers revealed a lot about how Asian women were pursuing and managing careers, both professionally and personally. Leadership is always a popular topic, and there were some studies on leadership and Asian women. A couple of these dissertations were quite recent. Now, the dissertation is Experiences of Asian Immigrant Women, Journeys into Corporate Leadership, interviewed 8 immigrant women. While each was interesting, it was difficult to draw any common conclusion other than the strong importance of family and its support. Lim's dissertation was at the Graduate Center. It was based on an online survey. She made the point that while the stereotype of women in general is to be viewed as less competent but warm, Asian women are viewed as competent but less warm. So it seems contradictory to how gender women or women in general are viewed. That is, white women are stereotyped as communal, skilled in interpersonal interactions, whereas Asian women are viewed as intelligent and mild-tempered, reserved, and socially aloof. This is from her work, from Lim's work. So the conclusion can be that Asian American women may be perceived as less suitable for executive leadership positions since they are seen more as competent rather than agentic. And agentic is typically associated with being forceful and strong in decision making. The paper by Kawahara et al. Was interesting since it was based on a large survey. Although this was mostly people working in nonprofits and not focused on women, they made a couple of points that were relevant. First, that Asian American leaders, especially women, favored collaborative style. Second, that Asian Americans may interpret what is meant by good leadership in a way that is different from the American norm. So, for example, they may view assertiveness differently, not necessarily as being aggressive or agentic. They may not, quoting from the paper, see the characteristics of compassion and use of indirect communication as passive or non-assertive. Rather, they view these strategies as important to achieve similar leadership goals while maintaining interpersonal relationships and protecting others from losing face, an important value in Asian cultures. So this was an interesting conclusion or an interesting way to view how Asians view leadership. It's not that they don't have these skills or cannot do things certain way, it's that they choose not to. So some conclusions from the papers that I read were firstly that American corporations have been changing dramatically in many different ways in the last few decades. Eagly has written a lot on women's leadership and suggested that corporations may be at a point where the female style of leadership is what is valued and is considered as true leadership. This is a kind of transformational leadership relying on what was once considered as feminine traits, such as a collaborative style. At the same time, stereotypes of Asian women differ from women in gender. So where do they stand? The modern minority myth or stereotype still lingers. In fact, some suggest that it leads to Asian women not being considered as a minority and being viewed as being privileged. Some other challenges in leadership are the implicit understanding that many employees have of a leader. This is called as implicit leadership theory. And in this paper, the author said that the implicit understanding that employees have of a leader does not include Asians or what is considered as Asian characteristics, like, again, competence. Finally, Asians themselves struggle with some issues. The Nicole study of middle managers in Fortune 1000 companies survey of Asian American women showed that most of them had a complicated trajectory of identity over the span of their careers. They had ambivalence regarding the model minority stereotype and complicated and mixed feelings on the effect of Asian culture. This is a quote from the paper. The effect of Asian culture, which reinforces and supports values such as conformity, obedience, hard work, discipline, and humility. So the authors report that Asian women were ambivalent about these values and how they play out in the workplace. So some conclusions from the literature I read on Asian women, work and organizations. In America, Asian women follow American norms for working rather than those in Asian countries. And this is shown by the percentage of women working outside the home. Asian women are different from both women in general and Asian men. They have some unique characteristics. Asian women have a different stereotype associated with them than women in general and other minority women. In fact, the stereotypes are different for Asian women from Black women, and I didn't see any studies on Latinx women, but they are likely to be different as well. Asian women view themselves differently than women in general, and women in general refers mostly to white women. Asian women are different in many ways, but particularly along lines of country of origin. But there are similarities as well between Asian cultures. Asian women are segmented along generational lines. The generational differences are quite strong, and they play out in different ways in the workplace, to the advantage and to the disadvantage. So what works for one generation may not work for another. Asian women are generally ready to educate themselves and re-educate if needed for career purposes. Asian women do not necessarily view white men as antagonists, and indeed often prefer them as mentors. And this is a very different view than a lot that I read in women's studies. Asian women utilize distinctive strategy of extended family for career support. And this point was made in a couple of papers that this enabled many Asian women to manage their careers quite well without giving up family. Asian women view career and work as a way to role model for their children and sometimes to act as protection against racism. So these are some of the conclusions I could reach after reading all these papers. But there was not just one big one that that was possible. So in this last section, and to wrap up my presentation, is what we know, what we don't, and what we need to know. I'm just showing you a sample of two of my chapters. As I mentioned, my book is actually in two parts. One is organizational perspective, that is chapters 2, 3, and 4. The other is the individual perspective, that is 5, 6, and 7. So chapter 4 on mentoring, networks, and leadership is from the organizational perspective. And as I mentioned also, that every chapter starts out from the general and goes more towards the specific. So the general situation, then more specific towards women, Asians, and if possible, depending on publications or research, to Asian women. In chapter 4, I talk in general about mentors and sponsors. And this was emphasized repeatedly as being very important for career management and what we might term as career success. Again, as I mentioned, career success can mean different things to different people. So I'm a little careful about saying career success. But in general, having a good mentor is a good thing. So the importance of mentors and sponsors was mentioned. The importance of building and maintaining networks in the workplace and outside the workplace. And in some chapters, I talk about why it is important now to build networks, especially outside a particular workplace. Even if you are working in a particular organization, you need to be aware of what is going on outside. So, and then the chapter talks about leadership in organizations, because this is related to leadership as well. And in leadership is a very deeply studied subject, very extensively studied, and there are many theories. But I particularly looked at theories that refer to the leader as an individual, and there are many of them. There is also a lot of literature on women and organizational leadership, because as you can imagine, initially they were the contention was that women are different in terms of leading. They have a style that is not quite the style that corporations need, and so on. So there was a lot of research on that. And then there is some published work on Asian American leadership. And like I mentioned, there were a couple of publications that specifically refer to Asian American women leaders, the two dissertations I mentioned. So that is chapter 4. That gives a view of what mentors and sponsors are, how they should be chosen, how they work out, and so on, what are networks and relationships in organizations, and what are organizational views towards leadership. Chapter 6, which falls in the individual category, is about social and organizational identities. As I mentioned, one of the forces that influence career experiences is how we perceive ourselves. So this refers to that. So the chapter talks about identity in general and how that develops, and there are different theories about it, social identities and professional identities. Because a book is about careers, it is important that a professional identity is a thing. When we work in a workplace, we do have professional identities. Part of it is as a member of the organization, which is organizational identity, Part of it is the work we do, which refers to the profession. So Asian women working in corporate workplaces have both their social personal identities as well as their professional identities. And often this becomes a big challenge. To what extent should they express their personal identity in the workplace? Are they comfortable doing so? And if they cannot, what kind of conflict that might have caused? And the conference that I attended, some of the attendees made very interesting points about how they had initially felt that they could not express their personal Asian identity at work or a woman identity at work and how they changed over time. So this chapter talks about the importance of identity and understanding of identity, the various kinds of identity. In the end, the choice of identities is, of course, up to the person, what identities they choose to have and choose to express and how they do so. So finally, some gaps in knowledge. So much is unknown. Where data is available for other groups, but not Asian women, and others where there is research on women, but again, not Asian women. So some questions, and by no means is this extensive or even the most important, but these are just some things that some questions that I asked when I started out and I could not find the answers. Where are Asian women? What industries are they in? This is basic data. In what geographies across the United States? What positions? What departments? There was some paper that I read saying that Asian women don't work in areas like HR. They are in more technical areas. I don't know whether that is the reality or whether that was someone's opinion. So there is no data about it. Second is, what resources have worked for Asian women in terms of their career management? What personal resources? What organizational resources? What professional resources? And in my mind, importantly, what community or social resources? In terms of how actually things played out in their corporate workplaces, what has been the response to factors that are important for organizational careers? For instance, the willingness to acquire power and to use it is important. So what is the attitude of Asian women towards that? How do they develop networks? Who do their networks consist of? What is their attitude towards mentors? There have been a couple of papers about mentors, but there's not been a very broadly descriptive one. Importantly, what is the appetite for risk of Asian women? Because any upward career movement requires certain amount of risk. In fact, there might be risk all around. So how willing are they to accept risk? What is their attitude towards risk? That is very important as well. And it is very, very important in these times because organizational workplaces are changing. And they are not the same environments as they used to be 20 years back. So a willingness to accept change and to be prepared to do things that had not been very comfortable to do probably is going to be a necessity. Finally, what can Asian women expect in workplaces? The women that were first in the workplace might have had token status and they would have faced different challenges. The ones that come later, the second generation and later, have different challenges. So what is it that they can expect? These are some questions and some gaps in knowledge. So my parting thoughts, why I wrote this book. This book was written during my first and only sabbatical. And this was truly a labor of love. I wrote this for Asian women. As I mentioned, I wrote this in response to both what my students said and what women in my personal network were saying. So part of my goal was to communicate knowledge and information available in research to these groups. In that sense, I did accomplish my goal. Again, I wrote this to the best of my understanding. I'm sure that I missed out on a lot of good work. And I would really appreciate your letting me know what is left out. The more we know together, the better. And finally, the larger goal was this. Different women have different careers, and that is okay. The goal is for women who are in corporate workplaces to have an understanding of how things work there. That was my goal. And that is to understand how the game is played. Then it is their choice on how they decide to play. But they cannot do this on their own. They need support. This support can come from the workplace, can come from personal or family life, and can come from communities. I felt that I could and should try to be an asset for junior women and those both entry level and moving up. The ones who are already in senior positions don't need my help or don't need anyone's help. So in the end, what I would wish is for Asian women to be able to achieve their ambitions and have optimal career experiences. And I wanted to do my little bit in that regard. Thank you for listening. That finishes my presentation.
Thank you very much, Professor. I do remember when you stopped by the Institute just to inquire whether or not we had any information available for you to help with your book. So that just a couple of years ago, so you've accomplished a great deal. We're gonna allow right now for question and answers. If folks happen to raise their hand, I'll select you and you'll be able to ask Professor Lakshminarayanan a question.
Professor, I applaud you and I sincerely wish this topic was a topic that was vastly discussed. I start with something I think about every day because I'm raising a daughter who happens to be of Asian American descent. And when crossing these boundaries and borders and identity and really the collective issues of really workplace behavior, career planning and self-actualization, I come to one place and I want to ask you, what can a mother do? What can parents do? And what are the adult programs, the mentorship that you think would empower them to really look at this complicated landscape without feeling really the enormous weight that often comes with just taking that first step?
Well, thank you, Lisa, for saying that. I think really, as I mentioned, you know, I felt there was such a lack. There was a lack in my personal life that, you know, I didn't have mentors to ask. In fact, there were very few women, let alone Asian women. So what would I recommend? I think in personal terms, you know parenting best. What I felt or what I read is that Asian women might have a challenge in how they perceive themselves in the workplace. That is what I meant as expressing their identity in the workplace. So to be comfortable doing that, that's a big challenge. So that they don't have to necessarily fit in into, you know, someone else's idea of who they should be. So that of course depends on the workplace and depends on others and depends on, you know, the individual, that is your daughter, and how confident she feels in doing certain things. For example, I'll tell you that this conference that I attended and this woman who happened to be of, you know, Indian origin, she was Asian Indian, she mentioned how she would not talk about certain festivals that she celebrated at her workplace, you know, for many years, because that kind of set her apart from the norm, right? So it's okay to celebrate Christmas, it's okay to celebrate something else, but not Diwali or, you know, things like that. So are they comfortable doing that? That becomes a question. So I don't know quite the answer to this. I will say that I felt that there is a strong need for the community. I mean, we can do some things as parents, but there is no such thing as, let's say, a mentoring program just in the community, right? That if you're interested, let's say, like my daughter, and she's interested in, say, marketing, that are there senior women in marketing, not at the company she's at, but some other companies that could, Asian women that could serve as mentors. And that's just not the case. So I don't even know that there are, you know, professional organizations for women that help younger and entry-level women. So I would say that is something that, you know, to work towards is to set up groups like that, because I know they are set up in general situations. They are set up for, you know, for example, women in science, you know, across, just in general, not just Asian women, but women in science, because there were so few women in science. So I personally had a friend who was mentored for this this researcher in Michigan, even though my friend lives in New Jersey. So it is possible to do these things now. So I don't know whether I answered your question, but, you know, I do think that it's not just your effort. But it has to be a joint effort by the community as well.
In other words, a community that itself does not have to be relatives, parents, or professors, yeah, and other interested adults. Because yeah, my own struggle as a young lawyer, I saw this in my own career. Now, yeah, as I see my daughter navigating her career, yeah, I see a real parallel in terms of, yes, the receptivity is there, the ability, yeah, to mobilize is there, but yeah, one really has to still struggle with the question, who are the right parties to guide you? I say that because I don't want to say that mentorship programs in itself are the end all to everything, because sometimes a mentor may come with really limited knowledge,
yes,
of you.
Yes. There are many kinds of mentoring. It needn't be one-to-one. And people, you know, some people have multiple mentors and that's okay. But there should be available resources. My point is that, you know, as senior people in the organizations or people with experience, you should be available. There should be some structure that these are available as resources for these younger women. And I really appreciate the hard work they do. They do really work hard and they really fight the good fight, you know, in the workplaces, and they try their best, but it is very difficult. So I think that really we need to step up. I'll make a couple of comments about, you know, Asian cultures, which people may or may not agree. You know, we are very good in being competitive, and maybe we need to be a little better in being collaborative. I will say that one, you know. So just a sense of, you know, looking for that something that's good for one of us is good for all of us. So that's kind of an important thing. And the other thing that probably in workplaces, and we can learn from other cultures, is to speak up and advocate for ourselves. So if there is something that we feel, you know, is not right, then to speak up. Because I think, again, and people can disagree with me, is that, you know, mostly we don't want to be the one that, you know, kicks out. We don't want to, you know, cause trouble. And sometimes that doesn't work out well. So I think just in terms of, you know, appreciating and having our children to speak up and advocate for themselves is probably good training.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sun. Professor, we have a question. It says, could you expand on the usual or main networks used by Asian women to progress in their corporate career?
I have no idea. That is one of the areas of research. We simply don't know. Beyond what they use as personal resources, I really don't. There is nothing. There is nothing on, you know, who do they rely on? Who are their networks? There is nothing, no research on it. We simply don't know. And that is why I feel that, you know, they are doing the best that they can. But I don't know to what extent, you know, what kind of, there's no research on it. I can speak anecdotally from the women that, you know, I talk to, but that doesn't represent everyone, you know. So I think that someone needs to research this.
Whatever happened to the group that organized the Asian women conferences that you referred to earlier on in your talk?
Yes. So that those conferences, you know, and they organized talks as well. And that went on for some time. There was one person that organized it, and people did attend these. I went to a few of them. But I think that this is probably a big weakness, is that people met each other but didn't progress into building relationships. It didn't build networks. There was no, after that event, there was no further follow-up of, you know, building on these relationships. It was just that people met, they exchanged their experiences, and then they went their separate ways. So, you know, that was it. That was the end of it. And once the person that had been the propelling force left, the organization just went away. So I think that is another thing that probably we need to do better, is institution building, you know, to have succession building. The person who originated it did a fabulous job, and she did run it for, in the sense that she did run it for a few years, And sometimes the conferences had a couple of hundred people and they had, you know, discussions. But then it just went away. And in fact, I remember that at one of the conferences, there was a time that the book Lean In came out, and that was one topic of discussion. And I was just thinking that there is no equivalent book like that for Asian women. And many women at that time, they said, Lean In is not for us. You know, it doesn't speak to us. These are not our issues. The answers suggested there are not going to work for us. So where is a kind of Lean In for Asian women? So that would be, you know, someone would write that. That would be fabulous.
Yeah, I see. The individual who asked that question just mentioned that they have ethnographic research on women transnational entrepreneurs and found that they use their husband's networks or their school or college networks, but no formal networks.
Oh, great. Okay, please send me the reference. As I mentioned, I didn't do women in business. Women owning businesses, because that's a very different way of managing a career than being in an organization. Being in organizations is kind of, you know, the environment, you know, if you understand how it works, you can manage your career in a certain way. Owning your own business is a totally different challenge, because you are your own boss. You have to read the marketplace. You have to make your own decisions. So in a sense, it is far less certain environment than organization. And I know that some people have done work on women entrepreneurs. And that would be great if somebody were to write about Asian women entrepreneurs and what networks they use and what resources they use. I read a paper about, I think this is women entrepreneurs in the UK, and even here saying that, you know, many women actually work in the business, but sometimes they are not really, you know, they might be running the business, they are behind the scenes, but they are not the face of it. And the opposite also could be true, that, you know, the women might be the face of the business and the real support comes from the men's networks and so on. So that's a whole different area of how business ownership and business management happens. And there have been papers all over the place on, you know, different situations that women found themselves in. They might have started their own business out of choice because they wanted to, or because they had to. So, you know, and this is there in entrepreneurship literature as well. The reasons for entrepreneurship or for owning your own business, which are slightly different things. But please send me your paper. That would be great.
Your book is available on the IGI global website for purchase. The hardcover is $148.
Something.
And then the ebook is as well $148, and then there's a soft cover for $112, and on demand for individual chapters for $37.50. Folks go to our website, ari.info, under the professor's lecture page, there's a link to the IGI global website, and if you're interested in purchasing the book for leisure or as well as classroom usage, please do so.
I should mention that, you know, when I wrote the book, it's chapter by chapter. So I did have certain women and younger women read this, and not everyone might, you know, they might find certain chapters are particularly important for them. And so that is why they give the option of buying specific chapters. And my goal was also for women who are working. It's written in a fairly understandable style, even though I do refer to, you know, because I wanted to base it on publications, not just people's opinions or something that's in popular print. So it does have the references and so on, but it's written in language that's very easy to understand. So my goal was also that, you know, younger women are starting out, if they want to just read on particular topic, they could buy just the chapter and, you know, get an understanding of it. So the person who asked about, you know, mentoring, or Lisa, I think, mentioned about, you know, having just one mentor, you can look at just the chapter on mentorship. And mentorship has been studied a lot, although not much has been studied about Asian women. My big point is that, you know, Asian women are really positioned so differently than other women in workplaces. And yet what they really receive in terms of workplace responses might be what are directed as at women in general. Some Asian women figure out how to, you know, make their difference work as an advantage for them. And at the conference I attended, in fact, some of the Asian women, they said that, you know, yes, we were the first one, you know, in our workplace. They never had an Asian woman before. They didn't know what to do with us. They were so unfamiliar. But we use that to our advantage, because if someone has no idea of, you know, who you are, you can build an impression. And there's a whole field of management called impression management. So, but they saw it as an opportunity that, you know, they were such an unknown group, so to speak. And they built expectations and they pushed it forward as their advantage. So some Asian women are able to do that and use this kind of their being unfamiliar in the workplace and different also from other women to their advantage. But some of them may not. So, you know, the point is that for Asian women, first need to know how workplaces function. Because often I think as Asian women, we rely on our competence, we rely on our education, we rely that we know how to do the job. And we think that is enough, that when you're in the workplace, you know, that should be enough. You know, I'm doing my job so great. And why isn't that enough? And the reality is that that is not how workplaces function. And that is why I wanted to give equal importance to how you are perceived matters so much in terms of what your workplace experience will be. It's not even career success or growth. It's just that whether you're even happy in the workplace is going to matter to how people perceive you. And like, you know, Lisa mentioned is that, you know, to be comfortable being yourself in the workplace, and that is the piece of what you identify as. How comfortable are you in expressing yourself? So Asian women need to be aware that, you know, it is okay to have that, you know, their personal identity there, or they need to figure out how to express it. But I think these are things that have not been, I'd say, given importance, because we give importance to getting the job, to, you know, keeping the job, to being successful in that way. But whether they are happy in doing that, that's a different question. So it was so fascinating to see that how Asian women are managing their careers, you know, being different. And sometimes they just go their own way and they are doing things, you know, the way that works for them. Like the study that Namita Manohar had done, and where the women, they saw so clearly that their role as working was their role as being a mother, that these two were the same thing. So in the workplaces, when there's constant talk of, you know, work, family, or work, home conflict, these women didn't see it as a conflict. So, you know, is that something that is speaking to them? They're saying that, really, I don't feel a conflict. No, I feel quite happy being here. So I think that these are things that Asian women, they shouldn't feel that somehow, you know, they're not the norm. They're the norm for themselves, right? So I think that's important for them to understand. And that is why partly I wrote the book, is that so they get a comfort also, they get the sense of who they are, right?
Hi, thank you so much for this presentation, and everything that you're saying really resonates so deeply with me. I everything you just said about, you know, feeling like my performance is great and everybody thinks it's great and still feeling like I've completely plateaued in my career and I'm not really getting, you know, the opportunities and the chance to be promoted and things like that. And I'm just at a loss, honestly. And I think that lately, you know, I'm probably, so there's only a couple, I work for a small firm. There's only a couple senior people, Asian senior people above me, and I'm the most senior Asian woman there. So lately I feel like I've been used as a sort of a tool for the company to show, look, hey, look, we're improving diversity and we're, and all that. I've been speaking on internal women's panels. I've been speaking about, you know, making remarks to the entire firm about the rise of anti-Asian violence and harassment. You know, all of these things were asked of me. It's not that I, you know, volunteered for them. And, you know, even though it was like out of my comfort zone, I did it because I feel like this is a way to elevate my profile and to really show people I can be a leader. But I'm wondering where is this is going to go for me. And if you think that you see anything in your research that shows that this is sort of like something that would help me, or are there things that I'm just not seeing, that I'm not doing? Because I really do feel like I am a relationship person. I am a networker. I do really place a lot of, you know, emphasis on that and put a lot of time in that, but I really haven't seen a lot from it.
Well, you know, I cannot give you advice, but I would say that what you were saying earlier, there has been a lot of work on what is called as tokenism. And, you know, tokenism work was done many years back in the context of women being in organizations and, you know, treated exactly like what you were saying, that because they are the single person, they somehow represent the entire group. And so they are the go-to person for, you know, anything related to that issue and so on. So there has been work on tokenism that, you know, you could read. I don't know the solution to that. The solution to that is, you know, organizational. So I can't speak to that, but it might be helpful to read about, you know, what had been the experiences of other people with regard to it.
Thank you. That's helpful.
I work in the world where we work with global companies, and I've seen that many of the expatriated American workers, and particularly women overseas assignment, to be treated very differently than those of their peers here. I wonder if your research touched upon really the whole expatriation process and how much of that really impacts on an existing really landmine of issues that already exist here at most of the home offices. And now we extend it into these satellite offices in which much of the conflict really is more than just culture and gender, but it all exacerbates because of it.
I'm not quite sure that, you know, what conflict you're referring to. You're talking about women in American corporations but they are working abroad for some time and then they come back. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes. They take assignments abroad, and yes, their assignment as an expatriate or often now localized, it really highlights some of the issues that really are embedded in these kinds of really emerging, I guess, emerging issues I see not yet really very much talked about, but could very much affect even those kinds of policies that are related to really home assignments, in which assignments are given in ways that are very arbitrary sometimes.
Yeah. So in that regard, I think in literature, what is there is, you know, there is a whole bunch in terms of just career management and what works for, you know, career growth. And typically getting an, you know, overseas assignment is considered as a step, you know, and especially if you're going towards a global organization, if you're going towards the higher levels, you know, of course, the CEO or even the next levels, to have an overseas assignment is something of a necessity. That has been addressed in literature, you know, in terms of career management. The other piece that, you know, related to that is that have been addressed, I think, to some extent, is that it is difficult for women to often do this, because it's not easy for them to move their families, you know, unless they have a spouse who can move jobs. And so that is the only thing I've seen. There might be some things in literature not specific to women, but in general of these expatriates coming back and the tension it causes, you know, between them after they come back, what is their expectation, how they are treated by the company, how others feel they are treated and so on. So I don't know if you're referring to that conflict. There is some literature on that, but that is not specific to women. So, you know, these are the three things that I have seen in literature. I don't know if that answers your question, but there's nothing that talks about, you know, women, and certainly not Asian women. I think there is literally nothing about Asian women and overseas assignments. I don't know to what extent people go on. You know, they might be traveling abroad maybe for some time, but I don't know, relocation, I am not sure to what extent that happens.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lisa. Okay.
So do you have any question, Anthony? Even if you're not an Asian woman, you can have my book. You know, I was helped so much by my daughter and my son, even though he's not an Asian woman, but, you know, he made so many points about career management that were very useful. So I'll say in my parting remarks that, you know, I think Asian women are fabulous. You know, they have done so much in the workplaces, worked under very difficult conditions. Even when they have not been understood fully, they still put forward their best effort. But I just put in a cautionary note that especially in organizations that some of the methods that they used in the past might not work that well in the future, simply because organizations are changing so much. So there's a lot in career management saying that the traditional, typical organizational career has changed and might have changed permanently. And so one thing that, you know, we have to be, or Asian women have to be prepared for, is just a movement across organizations that there may not be this job security that, you know, might have been a prized feature of organizational jobs. So they should be prepared to move. On the other hand, you know, they are very willing to learn and re-educate. So that's a good thing. But to be giving up some of this security might be necessary. So that's my parting words.
Thank you very much, Professor. To complement the professor's research on Asian women in corporate America, Professor Margaret M. Chin at Hunter College also recently published her book called Stuck: Why Asian Americans Don't Reach the Top of the Corporate Ladder, so the overall Asian American population. You can actually watch that talk on our website under programs and co-sponsored events. The video is available online. And also the professor earlier on mentioned Pawan Dhingra, who gave a talk together that was co-sponsored by the Research Institute. That talk is available online, his new book, Hyper-Education, Why Good Schools, Good Grades, and Good Behavior Are Not Enough, also available under programs and co-sponsored events. So with that...
I don't know why I should, you know, hawk Pawan Dhingra's book, but I just put it up. I am reading it now.
Well, Pawan recently was elected the president of the Association for Asian American Studies. So yeah. And he was, yep. So with that, I'd like to thank Professor Sambhavi Lakshman Narayan very much for presenting on her book tonight, bringing together all this wealth of information. And I hope everybody enjoyed the talk. With purchase it online. Link is available to on our website, to the IGI Global website. Purchase it if you don't want the whole thing. Buy the particular chapter that is relevant to you, and please share it. With that, I'd like to welcome, thank everybody for attending tonight's talk. Enjoy your weekend. Get vaccinated if you haven't gotten vaccinated. And also in regards to the recent rise in anti-Asian hate, please be a upstander, not just a bystander, and stand up for your fellow person. And with that, good night and have a great weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Anthony.